outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, October the 1st, 2025, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well, those of you of goodwill, as we like to say often. We do not wish our enemies well, folks, and the President of the United States agrees with us. It's almost as if he's been listening in on our programs. No, folks, I don't think that he has been. But nevertheless, he agrees with us. We don't wish our enemies well, folks. We're not talking about minor disagreements. We're talking about people who want to kill us, who want to wipe us out, who want to exterminate us. As we have said many times on this program, if you want an idea, if you want a picture of the future that awaits all of us in terms of the existential and apocalyptic threat that we all face, then just watch one of the Terminator films. And imagine that you're living a real life version of that, because the truth is, folks, we are. Okay, it's the real deal. We have people who are as intent upon killing us, wiping us out, as the machines were in the Terminator films. Yeah, unfortunately, folks, this is not science fiction. It's the real deal. This is reality. And anybody who paints a picture for you that varies from that reality, you need to see them for what they are. They are not your friends. They're not on your side. Anybody that tries to groom you, tries to fill your head with ideas that in any way take your eye, forces you to take your eyes and your concentration off of the fact that we, the Gentiles, are the most endangered species on the planet. Anybody who does that, folks, even in the most seemingly harmless way, just by taking our understanding of things off just a few degrees, okay? They are not part of the solution. They're part of the problem. Now, I bring this up, folks, because last week, our good friend Stas, who is with us again today, we did a very, I thought, well-argued program warning people against allowing themselves to get distracted with silly and useless information during these very serious times. And we pointed out the fact that in the aftermath of the murder of Charlie Kirk, worldwide Jewry were in an uproar over the accusations, the insinuations, the implications, whatever we want to call it, that were being made tying Charlie Kirk's murder to Israel. They were and are very nervous about this, folks, so much so that the Prime Minister of Israel was forced on several occasions to come out publicly and to say, no, we didn't have anything to do with it. That's how dangerous this idea was, and the fact that it could, if conditions are correct, or if they're right, that this thing could take off. People could start believing this, and then it would open the door for all sorts of other things, folks. Discussions about 9/11, such as the ones that Tucker Carlson is having right now in his program, Israel's role in the murder of John F. Kennedy and his brother Robert F. Kennedy, 9/11, the anthrax attacks, COVID. It would just open the door to a tsunami of all sorts of other very problematic things. And so one of the issues that we brought up on last week's program was how that's what we need to keep hammering. That's the nail that we need to keep hitting. And to not allow ourselves to get distracted with all sorts of other discussions that are not directly tied to that, okay? Now, almost as if the people, almost as if we hadn't even done the program, folks, within, I don't know, a few hours or so, I started receiving emails from readers of the website, listeners of the program, sending me YouTube links featuring all sorts of discussions, other than the ones dealing with Israel possibly being involved in Charlie Kirk's murder. The first video that was sent to me was some gun guy on YouTube, and he was saying that Charlie Kirk had been shot from behind. Okay. And then I got another one saying that Charlie Kirk, that it was a loaded microphone, his lapel mic, had actually blown up and killed him. Okay. Well, folks, you know, I'm not going to single anybody out, the people, the persons, several of them. I wouldn't say it was a flood of people, folks, but any number higher than zero is an unacceptable number to me, because what it tells me is that people are not paying attention. They're not paying attention to the things that are covered on this program or on the website, and they're just not, they're plain not thinking for themselves. They're not thinking strategically. They're allowing their attention span to get pulled away from the thing that really makes the Jews nervous, which is any discussion involving their involvement in any way in Charlie Kirk's murder. And instead, you know, their attention gets dragged off into these other realms that, I mean, one of these videos, folks, within 24 hours of it being up, it had already gotten 5 million views, the one saying that Charlie Kirk was shot from behind. So to the individuals who sent me these, you know, these emails, I said, please don't waste your time with these things, okay? You know, these kinds of videos, these kinds of discussions don't make the Jews nervous. They love them. And the proof of it, folks, is that amidst the flurry of op-eds and stories and everything else that were written in the immediate aftermath of Charlie Kirk's murder, written by pro-Israel elements, saying Israel never had anything to do with this, and, you know, to accuse us of this is a blood libel and all the rest of it. Okay, the flurry of articles that came out in the aftermath of the suggestion that maybe Israel had something to do with Charlie Kirk's murder, there were no articles whatsoever coming out denouncing these other theories about how Charlie Kirk may have been shot from behind, or it may have been his lapel mic that killed him or something like that. And why, folks? Why were there not any articles coming out denouncing these things? Because these kinds of things, these kinds of distractions, are exactly what the Jews want and need. They want all of us to be focused on something else other than their role in it. Now, folks, you know, we can't prove that the Jews killed Charlie Kirk, okay? But we do have strong circumstantial evidence, at least adding them to the list of possible suspects besides the lone assassin, okay? And this is what we have to hammer home in our conversations with our friends, our family members, fellow churchgoers, workers, fellow workers, people in the neighborhood. Okay, we have to say to them, you know, Israel, you know, was starting to really put a lot of pressure on Charlie Kirk because he wasn't buying into the notion that the attacks on October the 7th were a surprise, and Charlie Kirk was saying that what was going on in Gaza was ethnic cleansing and a couple of other things. And, you know, there's enough video out there, folks, of Charlie Kirk saying this in these various interviews that he gave, that, you know, having this conversation with the people in our immediate environment, this plants the seeds that we need later, folks, for turning these people, for waking these people up from their slumber and making them part of the great Gentile Renaissance, the awakening, the reawakening. Okay. So we're not going to be spending a lot of time on that, folks. In fact, we're not really going to be spending any time on it because equally important and I would say equally apocalyptic events have taken place in the last week since we were all together that warrant more discussion and more attention. But before we get to that, I want to ask a question of all of you out there listening. Okay, and I'm not expecting an answer, folks. What I'm asking that you do is that you ask this question of yourself and then answer it for yourself. Because depending upon the answer that you give for this, this is going to reveal to you, you know, how seriously you take all of this business that we find ourselves involved in these days. And the question is, why are you involved in this? Why do you follow fringe news commentary and news analysis? Why are you involved in the quote-unquote truth movement? Okay, are you involved in it because you find it interesting? Are you involved in it because you have an otherwise boring life and this kind of excites you? Or are you involved in this because you truly understand how much danger all of us are in and you want to do your part, as small as it may seem, you want to do your part to push that razor blade away from our collective throat? Now, if your answer to that question, folks, is the latter, meaning that you understand how serious the danger is that we all face, okay, and you want to push that razor blade away from our collective throat, then what that means is that you have to take this business seriously. Okay, just as you would if you found yourself someplace and somebody literally was holding on to you with one arm and in the other hand they had a razor blade at your throat. You would take that very seriously. You would do whatever you had to do in order to get away from this person. Okay, now this is the dilemma that we really find ourselves in these days, is that people say that they understand how serious all of this is and they want to do their part to prevent our own collective demise, but then they do these dumb things, folks. They let themselves get distracted. They, you know, instead of keeping their eyes on the bullseye, the front sight of their gun on the bullseye, they go all over the place. And in the process of doing this, they only empower these creatures who have sworn themselves to our destruction. They only empower them and make it easier for them to do what they are planning to do. And so, folks, what I am asking each of you out there right now is, have this conversation with yourself. Ask yourself, why are you involved in this? Why do you do this? And if your answer is, well, I'm bored and I really don't have much more to do with my life, and so, you know, I bounce from website to website, you know, finding whatever kind of, you know, interesting information that I can without thinking about the bigger issue here, which is that this enemy has to be defeated. If that's your answer, okay, well then, fine, keep doing that. Keep bouncing around the place. Obviously, you do not understand the seriousness of what all of this entails. But if your answer is the second one, folks, that you understand how serious all of this is, and you understand that a lot sooner than any of us would like to imagine that we could trade places with the people of Gaza, not trade places with them, but that we could find ourselves living in the same situation if our enemies are successful in doing what they intend to do to us. If you really do understand that, then it's time to wisen up and to not allow ourselves to fall into these traps that are all over the place, folks. They're everywhere. If you think that we don't have an enemy that is very thorough, that is very, you know, that knows what he's doing and is working 24, 25 hours a day in trying to destroy us, you're wrong, folks. They never take a break, just like the Terminator. Okay, he never takes a break. Anyway, folks, as I said, a lot has transpired since the last time we were together, not the least of which was the UN General Assembly and the run-up to it, where some really ground-shaking things have taken place. And we're going to be, you know, taking a look at all of this with our good friend Stas, who I'm going to be bringing up right now. Stas, before we jump into the current news, do you have anything that you would like to add concerning what I just spent the last 10 minutes or so discussing?
Oh, yeah. No, that's very important. I think people got to look at why they're interested in these things. If it is just a hobby, a distraction, then make sure to separate that out when you talk about politics to your friends and family. Don't start talking about UFOs and things like the Jeff Rentz thing when it's life or death now. Separate those two, the frivolous from the deadly reality of what we're going through right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically.
Yeah, so Stas, what has happened since we were last together is that somehow, by some weird magical thing, Donald Trump, who is owned by Netanyahu, who is owned by the Jews, who's owned by the Jewish lobby, who's owned by Miriam Adelson, who's owned by the donor class, and all of these other tentacles that we are told from all sorts of really, really smart and credible people, somehow he has done this thing that if everything is on the up and up, and as it appears to be, it seems to fly in the face of the conventional wisdom that we hear, depending on what podcast we happen to tune into, about Donald Trump just being a puppet to Jewish interests. He has told Netanyahu and the terrorist Jews making up the terrorist Jewish state that they will not be annexing the West Bank. He told them that they will not be annexing Gaza. He said that Gaza belongs to the people of Gaza and the West Bank belongs to the people of the West Bank. And let's see, what else did he do? He said that we're bringing an end to the war immediately. He said that there's going to be a multinational Arab force in Gaza to provide security, and that eventually there will be a Palestinian state that incorporates both of the West Bank and Gaza. Now, Stas, I'm not going to claim to be the smartest person in the world. I'm not. As I've said many times, I consider myself to be of above average intelligence, but certainly not a genius. So how do we square up the monotony that we hear on any given day from all sorts of geniuses, people with PhDs and all the rest of them, saying that Donald Trump is owned by Netanyahu and the Jewish lobby and Israel and Miriam Adelson? How is it possible that all of this has happened in the last week? How do we square up these two obviously contradictory things?
It's astounding. I mean, they're just not looking at reality. You look at both these men, Netanyahu and Trump, are exhausted. They've clearly been shouting at each other, like you cited out to me. Their voices are a horse. He makes the guy take a phone call from Qatar, which hasn't happened from a Gentile king for 2,000-3,000 years. He's not making up anything. If he was really in the pocket, like they're saying, then they would get the best minds from the New York Times and the Washington Post, and somehow they would do it. They would smooth over all this murder of the kids in Gaza and other complicated ways, and they would make people forget about it and continue the killing and let Trump do – they'd cover it that way. And, you know, but – it's not going down that way. He's clearly contesting Netanyahu every way that he humanly can. If people expect him to come right out and say, I'm ending the war and speak like an anti-Jewish person at a bar room or something like that, that's not going to happen. He's dealing with the most dangerous people in the world. Everybody is. It's just amazing to me that all these pundits, I don't know what they're expecting. It's like you had earlier today talked to me about the peace movement. And I was like laughing to myself going, what do they want? They want, you know, people, liberal people and peace activists to take over Gaza with them. And they're going to, you know, play hacky sack in the street and play the Grateful Dead music or something, whatever peace activists do. I mean, it's just, there's no sense. I mean, these things have to be solved the way he's doing it. You know, he's offering to change Gaza, business, real estate, whatever. This is just all stuff to save these people's lives because they're just about on the end of their rope and he's trying to come up with something to save them. And for some reason, no commentator can see through that. It's always, and you know, even some of his best defenders or whatever defend Trump on very American-related emotional issues too, which I get that. You know, the people want to see Hillary Clinton go down, James Comey go down, you know, and all this stuff within the country. And the ones who are supposed to know better seem to just say, oh, Trump is impotent. He can't do anything. Or he's owned by the blackmail of the Epstein list, which it did look that way for a while. But then, ironically, the Charlie Kirk assassination happened. And it did, this tragedy did ignite the Trump forces that keep Israel in check by the death of this guy, and he's back on his feet negotiating, and they didn't pick up on that either. At least that's the way I see it. I think you might see it that way too. He was energized by this unfortunate assassination, and it did reveal that Kirk, once a strong speaker for Israel, was having doubts, and they couldn't have that because a lot of the Democratic base has moved against Israel, and they need the white Christian men in the military to stick with Charlie Kirk and to stick with Netanyahu.
Because, like I say every program, I don't listen to anybody. I don't follow anything that's being said in any of these programs anymore. It's just too distressing, too depressing, too discouraging, you know, and it's like, you know, how do they, well, like I've said before, it's like watching somebody put together a puzzle and they put all of the pieces in the wrong place and nothing makes sense. So I'm going to have to rely on you, Stas, once again, to fill in the blanks for us and let us know what's being said out there amongst the, you know, what I refer to as the chattering class. How are they reacting, assuming that they're reacting at all? How are they reacting to the president's statement that there will be no annexation, that he will not allow? He was very, you know, to say there will be no annexation, using the passive voice, there will be no annexation, versus saying, I won't allow it, okay, which is the active voice, I will not allow it. How does anybody hear that? And he even said, when he was asked by the reporter, he said, I will not allow it. And they said, well, have you talked to Netanyahu about it? And he said, yeah, I have, but it doesn't matter whether I talk to him or not. It's not happening. I'm not going to allow it. How do the pundits, as you refer to them, how are they reacting to this? How are they, you know, framing this discussion, if indeed they're having this discussion at all?
not as strongly as they should be. I mean, there should be YouTubes and social media things all over the place defending the president, trying to back the guy up as he deals with these people that clearly they've been speaking about it in detail that, you know, they want to genocide everybody in Gaza. Well, how do you stop them? You got the president of the United States that's trying to stop them, has clearly said, I'm not letting you have this West Bank. Mm-hmm. And now he's made Netanyahu take the phone call from Qatar. Mm-hmm. And still, it's like not enough. And, you know, I do have to say, I think the point man on the situation between Trump and Netanyahu has, for better or worse, become Max Blumenthal of the gray zone.
Right.
He's a very knowledgeable guy. He's speaking on it, but he always sort of kind of dismisses the president, and he will interject as Marion Adelson controls him. But how does he account for this? And people mm-hmm. of the peace movement, how do they expect to stop this? I have an image that they want to make it like, yeah, code pink, and you're going to run in. It's going to be a lot of women, people in tie-dye t-shirts, liberals going in there to stop it. And there will be no money made or anything. I mean, you know, you have to use some powerful people to stop this genocide. If it's got to be business, it's got to be business. But he always interject, oh, rich Jews are going to own the Gaza oceanfront property or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know that. And even if that's the case, somebody's going to stop this thing before they kill all these people and then move on to do more killing.
Yeah.
And they take their eyes off. Like, how would you do it? You know? And, you know, sometimes I wonder about him. He goes in a room and he's yelling at, you know, the former Secretary of State, Blinken, who ran the government under Biden, who wasn't aware of consciousness. Obviously, the guy's gone. And I think probably Blinken and Schumer and guys like that were running the government for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes in the room and he's like, you're a genocide person. It's all emotion. And how are you going to stop this? You know, you have to make a deal, you know, and people don't like hearing that, you know. I don't blame somebody who's Muslim from the Middle East or a Christian in the Middle East that has been killed, who's outraged and they're afraid. How can we trust this white guy?
Sure.
I get it.
Yeah.
But at some point, he's throwing out some bones and you got to make a deal on it, because we have to say the thing. He's trying to hold back this country that does have a lot of evangelicals in the military. There are many people in the United States that are thirsting. They want to completely obliterate Tehran and every other capital in the Middle East because of their view of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a titanic shift, because Charlie Kirk, who speaks the language of the Christians, was starting to have second thoughts clearly about knocking this off. Because we have to keep it simple. If Jesus arrived on Earth today, what's he going to say? You should level the Middle East with your military. I'm a Jewish king, or was he a prince of peace? And would he say, are you kidding me? This is everything I taught against. And they've done everything to distract people from that. And you know, when you look at religion in America, there's so many denominations. They're all divided. That's clearly the way the Jews want it. So somebody can say some strange, oh, I don't think so. I think Jesus would want to protect us and bomb these people. And everybody just has the urge to get the Jewish off their back and go, oh, it's Hamas and we got to keep bombing. Just nonsensical stuff. And you know, I'm ranting on about it, but I haven't heard anybody to defend simply the president. Oh, he's obviously in this negotiation, working to the death to stop Netanyahu, calls him over here, but that isn't good enough. I don't know what they want. Like I said, people in tie-dye shirts coming in the flotilla, you know, which is nice. Or are you going to stop it with, you know, business?
Let me just play devil's advocate here. The code pink types, we can totally understand why they would adopt, because they're just irrational. They're liberals and they're irrational. Okay. They think that all that has to happen is that the bombs have to stop falling, and then suddenly everything magically in Gaza is just all going to come together. Okay. No more disease, no more starvation, no more death, no more medical, unable to deal with medical emergencies. Okay. So you can understand that to a certain degree with the out of touch and unrealistic, detached from reality liberal types. The ones that, the ones where I will not cut any slack for, however, are the ones who should know better. Okay, they're the ones who are constantly preaching this doctrine that the Jews control everything and that everything that happens happens because this is what the Jews want. And yet we have a president here who's not doing what the Jews want, okay? Because of what he has just done, number one, by telling the Jews that they're not going to get the West Bank and they're not going to get Gaza. Number two, that the war is going to end. Number three, that, just today, this president, who is supposedly owned by Netanyahu and the Jews and the Jewish lobby and Israel and Miriam Adelson and the donor class, sorry if I forgot anything or left anything out, he signed an executive order just today, folks, declaring that any attack on the nation of Qatar will be viewed as an attack on the national security of the United States. Now, why that nation, folks? Why did he single out Qatar for this? The same nation that the terrorist Jews attacked just 2 weeks ago, and in the process of doing this, destroyed the negotiations to end the war that were becoming very fruitful, okay? Is Netanyahu happy to hear about this executive order? Did the president do this because Netanyahu and the Jewish lobby and everybody, the donor class and Miriam Adelson, because they told him to do it? Now, folks, it sounds like, I'm being facetious here, but I'm not. I'm pushing you to consider these questions rationally and to answer them. Is Netanyahu happy? Now, Stas, you're going to play the devil's advocate for me. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Netanyahu happy with Trump's announcement that the war in Gaza is going to end? Is he happy about it?
Not at all. You can see on his face. He can't even disguise his anger. Yeah.
Okay. Is Netanyahu happy that Trump has announced, that President Trump has announced, that the Jews are not going to get their dirty hands on the West Bank?
Not at all. It's unheard of.
Okay. Okay. Are the Jews happy, or is Netanyahu happy that the president has announced that the Jews are not going to take control of Gaza?
No.
Okay.
No, not happy.
So Stas, the question is then, if indeed, as we've been told by all of these experts, all of these geniuses, that Trump is owned by Israel, owned by the lobby, owned by the Jews, owned by Netanyahu, owned by Miriam Adelson, the donor class, the Illuminati, Shabbat, and everybody else, then why is he doing these things?
To save the world.
Yeah, because he's not. That's right. He's not owned by all of these entities that we just listed, folks. Okay. Now, does this mean that the president does not have to take these entities into account? No, he has to. He has to. The Jews are not some, marginalized group of people living in a compound on top of a mountain out in the middle of Idaho or Montana. Okay. These are the most powerful and the most dangerous people in the world. You don't not take them into account when you are figuring out your plans for whatever. Okay. He has to take them into account, but he has to walk a very, very difficult and a very dangerous line to do this. He cannot go and do a podcast like this where he says the kinds of things that we say here. You know, in many ways, even though he is ostensibly the most powerful man in the world and with the most powerful voice in the world, he has less freedom to say what's on his mind than we do. Okay, he's more constrained and more strictured than we are. So what we're saying here, folks, is it's a different world out there than what you're being told. Okay, you know, everybody that imagines themselves, you know, really well acquainted with politics, especially fringe politics and New World Order, they're always pointing to the Matrix, you know, and how everything is a surreal computer program, nothing is real, and you have to break out of this Matrix in order to whatever. Okay, well, folks, that is true. There's a great deal of truth to that. And depending upon what all of us do, because we all bring something to this discussion, okay. I mean, I received a few a few emails from some listeners where they said, hey, did you hear Trump's press conference with Netanyahu where he kept using the phrase 3,000 years and talking about the problem in the Middle East? And they jokingly said maybe he's been reading you know, what you write on the website, since that has appeared somewhere between a million and a billion times. Well, folks, no, I don't think the president reads the website. I would be honored if he did. But that's not to say that there aren't people reading it who give him advice on things. Okay? And this is why it is important that all of us out there, we make sure that we go with that when we go out onto the battlefield of ideas, that we know what we're talking about, because you never know what combination of words is going to lead to what kind of a result. Now, I've brought this up before, and I'm going to bring it up again, folks, just as a little example of what I'm talking about. On one of my trips to Iran, it was right after the election in 2016, and Trump won, obviously. And so I was visited by a delegation from the president, and they wanted my opinion since I was an American. And they said, you know, we can't make heads or tails of this thing with Donald Trump. You know, do the Jews like him or do they not like him? Is he going to work for them or is he going, is this a new thing? And I said, this is a new thing. I said, and they said, well, what advice would you give? I said, well, I said, first of all, he doesn't want war. He hates war. And he has made it a top priority is to bring an end to the wars in the Middle East, and that includes no wars against Iran. So if I were to give some advice to the president here, the president of Iran, I would have him write an open letter, meaning a letter that is just put out there for the entire world to see. Congratulate the president on his recent victory, and tell him in this open letter that you look forward to working with him in securing a more peaceful world in the coming 4 years. So, folks, as it turned out, about a week or so after I returned back home from that trip, there's a news story talking about how the president of Iran had written an open letter to newly elected President Donald Trump, and basically all of the things that I laid out. Now, I'm not saying this, folks, in order to toot my own horn or whatever the phrase goes. I'm doing this to show how, as we say often, words lead to things, and why We need to be careful about what we say. We live and die based upon the nature of the conversations that take place. And so all of you out there who are having, and I only bring this up, folks, because, you know, I get emails from people. I get emails saying, I don't know what to make of this thing. What about this Epstein thing? It looks like Trump is dirty. Looks like he's guilty. Looks like he's been messing around with kids and all the rest of that. And so, you know, you can see how they are being, you know, they have swallowed that hook down to their gut. They're being reeled in by, you know, they're being reeled in so that they can be tossed into the frying pan. And so, again, folks, getting back to this Matrix thing, we have to be very smart about this. All right. We have just seen in the last week or so, we have seen some, we have seen things that we have never seen before, things that we would never have imagined. Well, I did. Okay, folks. Everything that we see taking place right now is just part and parcel of what I expected to see 8 years ago with Trump. Okay. However, folks, as we say often on this program, we have to remember that his name is Donald Trump. It's not Clark Kent. He's not Superman. So don't make his job harder by, you know, going into onto social media or wherever it is that people go and saying Trump is dirty, he's involved in this Epstein thing. No, folks. He is the one human being on the planet right now that is doing everything in his power to keep your skin from being burned off your body. Stas, your thoughts?
Absolutely, and everybody just seems to lose that point. I don't know what it is. I mean, all these expert guys, like Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. He's this, he's that. You know, I mean, you know, they don't like his language or whatever. They fail to remember that every president has basically had their careers more or less destroyed by trying to make peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, right.
Even popular ones. I mean, as you brought up on other shows, I mean, Bill Clinton was still popular with the left because of his, you know, hedonistic, disgusting lifestyle whatever. And they loved him, but even he got burned by that. By the Lewinsky affair.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's not only Trump's personality. I mean, maybe some of us are, you know, the country, wow, geez, I wish Trump wouldn't come in. He's so inflammatory. But it got this bad. The border's been wide open. The country's loaded with gangs or whatever. So he's doing something. And this has been going on and on. And we know, we can feel there's something else to it. The Israelis are making a move to take more and more. They want the entire Middle East. They're getting restless. And it goes without saying, you probably think this too. He knows something that we don't know. There's an urgency to him. You know, he's been forced to try to deal with this situation because of unseen things we don't even know enough about. How are other powers being affected by this? You know, he's not doing this for his health. Clearly he's getting tired and worn out by this deal. The guy's been shot in the ear and half the country wants to kill him. And it's not just because of his conservative ideas. Those things would be, I'm strongly convinced that the Jewish-owned media would reduce the pressure on him.
Absolutely, yeah. If they didn't see him as a threat to their plans in the Middle East, then everything else that he did, he would be the star that he was before he got involved in politics. Okay. Everywhere he went before, the red carpet was rolled out for him. He was the Don, the Donald. And he didn't have to deal with any grief. It's only when he became political that all of a sudden he became public enemy number one. And it's not because of his quote unquote conservative views, folks. It's because he knows World War III is coming, that there is a group of nutcases who I mean, it's not just that they want to start World War III. They believe that they're morally obligated to start it. Okay. So that's the bottom line, as you just said very accurately, Stas. If he weren't a threat to what the Jews intend to do in taking over the Middle East and then the rest of the world, that has to, will only take place in the aftermath of a horrible world war, then he would have everything, his whole presidency would be easy street.
Absolutely. I mean, even guys that I really admire, like Colonel McGregor and all them, they kind of turn it on. They're acting as if one phone call from the Oval Office would end
right.
this thing.
Right.
Like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's all the absolute, I mean, I got to say this. I don't have any other language to use. It's the absolute crazy tricks of negotiations that Trump's used. Wild stuff. Insulting people. Saying crazy
yes.
stuff.
Yep.
Coming mm-hmm. back. Making friends with them. Or going with a horde of absolutely evil politicians with him. Now he wants mm-hmm. to take Tony Blair. I realize he's evil. He helped Bush incinerate Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
However, he's dealing with whatever you want to call it, the deep state Illuminati Israeli Jews, whatever mm-hmm. word you want to use it, that are all powerful. So he does these things. He's going to take Blair with him. But he is an alpha, and he says, this is the most powerful country, and I'm the man. At any point, he'll just tell Blair to shut up. Now,
yeah.
I used to be disturbed by these things. I don't like the idea that he uses Rubio. Of course, mm-hmm. I would love him to have Ron and Rand Paul running the place with
sure,
him, all these
sure.
nice guys. But
yeah.
that isn't the real world, and that's not who we're dealing with. We're dealing mm-hmm. with the most powerful people. So I hate how these people, they go, oh my gosh, it's the Rothschilds and the Israelis control everything with their Hollywood lobbies. Then they turn around and act like it's easy street for Trump to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane.
Yeah, he's got to work with the tools he has at his disposal. And I agree, everything that you just said. I didn't like the idea of Rubio being involved in this. I didn't like the idea of Mike Waltz, of Hegseth, and all of the rest of that. But at the same time, you know, Trump has to... He has to build this thing with the tools he has at his disposal. Who's he going to get for Secretary of State? Me? Who's he yeah. going to get for Secretary yeah. of Defense? You? He
right.
has to work with people who, for all intents and purposes, it's not a pretty thing to say, but they have been part of the deep state for a long time, which means they know how the deep state operates. Okay.
Well, before I forget, but, let me say, when you raise
yep.
the, oh, go ahead.
Nope, go ahead. No, I'll you say, go ahead.
Because I thought this was brilliant. No. If people doubt what we're saying, remember how they turned the country upside down when they nominated Chuck Hagel.
Yes.
I mean, and that was under Obama, who was an absolute, you know, he didn't do anything with the Israeli thing. He just got some liberals to back him on his quasi-real Iran deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned the place upside down,
mm-hmm.
stopping that guy because Hegel didn't like too much. He merely didn't like too much expenditures
mm-hmm.
To the Israelis. And people, you know, Gary Condit, I think is no, who was the guy?
Condit.
That,
yep.
Yeah.
He
all of a sudden, Chandra Levy is found.
Yes.
Him,
yes.
He's in trouble. So they're willing yep. to do anything. You know, Cynthia McKinney, a black woman. Merely questions the lobby and this and that, they destroy her. And anybody who comes up, so they're always forgetting this. Before I forget, also, Max made an interesting point. He goes, "Well, this as an American imperium, you know, we've directed HIMARS and the THAAD system missiles to protect Israel. They should be over in Taiwan to check China, of course. But on the mm-hmm. other hand, you know, this isn't going to go smoothly." Trump has to protect the Israelis in a sense, because if missiles lob in there, all of a sudden every, warrior of our country that's basically very Christian will flip out. So he's got to take them down carefully
mm-hmm.
or,
exactly.
or contain them carefully
mm-hmm.
by careful negotiations with, Qatar and Jordan and all these countries, Egypt, that are angry, that got to deal with these people, their own people too, that are mad. You know, so the whole entire Middle East doesn't erupt into famine and chaos and exoduses, you know, because the Israelis got the power to do that. They can lob. They've already shown it. They're in war with seven or eight countries.
Well, not only that, Stas, but let's not forget, they are just millimeters away from using nuclear weapons in the region. They made that clear right after October the 7th, where you had several high-ranking members of the Knesset saying that they should use nuclear weapons in Gaza. Okay, so the president understands this, that he's dealing with just the craziest of the crazy that's out there, folks. So as Stas said at the beginning of the program, anybody who has this idyllic picture in their mind about how he should do it, this is how I would do it. Okay, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, and as Stas said earlier, as bad as we all imagine it is, okay, with our very fertile imaginations, because, you know, our noses are buried in this material on a daily basis, I think it's probably about 1,000 times worse, folks. I think that if the president shared with the American people and with the world just 0.1% of what he knows about the danger that we're all in, it would cause the entire country to just collapse in panic. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah. Have you noticed the same people who criticize Trump? Of course, you know, guys like Escobar and all these guys like the Global South and Putin. Of course, they like, these men are intellectual. They like the calm way that Putin talks and he handles things. But even they've sort of said, geez, why aren't the Russian military's big? Why aren't they wrapping this up? It's because that's the Slavo-Ukrainian Russo version of the Middle East over there with Zelensky, who's equally an absolute psychopath like Bibi Netanyahu and Smoltrich, Ben-Gvir, and Katz, and on and on. All these guys, they never smile or whatever. They're dying to unleash nuclear weapons.
Yes.
That's what he's dealing with. So it doesn't matter whether you're a tough-talking New York construction worker or a calm Russian Slavic man of great diplomacy. They all have the same problem that they have to tread carefully because these guys clearly are aching to use nuclear weapons. As Colonel Vidman, the Ukrainian hero, has been like, don't be afraid of Putin's nuclear missiles. Go in and do what you want. I'm like, yes, I am afraid of Putin's nuclear missiles.
Yeah.
You're a freak. I mean, you know, and nobody picks up on this. Oh, yeah, why doesn't Mr. Trump do that? I think Trump has failed the diplomacy. And then they go too far saying he's completely impotent and owned. And that's just not true, because if he was, what would be the problem? So they're saying, oh, the, you know, Iran's hypersonic missiles.
And BRICS. Don't forget BRICS. And don't forget BRICS.
Everybody from the Global South will come up here and trounce Israel and Britain and America when this military industrial complex is nothing about the East and West Coast is loaded for years with multi-billion dollar weapons companies with all the weirdest stuff ready to go. And, you know, they're itching to use it. Now, this is, again, as we always say, doesn't take away from the bravery of the Iranian and Russian soldiers.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
But, you know, it's some of the defense of them is a little bit weird. Somebody or something, I mean, they might attack tonight, and I might look like an idiot for saying this, but somebody or something has told the line so the sophisticated Israeli military has not continued their decapitation effort.
Yeah.
And I think that's Trump.
Absolutely.
Trump,
yeah.
When you go, do not go in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, we may see, like we talked about in another podcast, that, you know, because this murder of the Gazans has gone so overboard, it can go the other way. he might be justified and his hand might start to get forced to actually do something. You know, could we
well, and I think, that, yeah, that is why I think for his executive order today announcing that an attack on Qatar will be viewed as an attack on the United States. And he said that it would result in economic, diplomatic, political, and a military response. Now, Qatar, folks, of course, like we said earlier, this is the nation that the terrorist Jew Netanyahu attacked in order to derail what the president was succeeding in doing in negotiating an end to the war in Gaza. Okay, so obviously the president picked Qatar, but it's for that specific reason. But folks, it's not going to end there. It's going to be Qatar today. Tomorrow it'll be the UAE, and then it'll be Saudi Arabia, and then it'll be Egypt, and then it'll be Jordan, and then Syria. Okay, depending on what kind of heat gets generated in Israel about, you know, in reaction to these developments that have happened in the last couple of days, the president's going to bring, this is going to be the ultimate Abraham Accords, where the United States is going to provide a defensive retaliatory shield. I mean, folks, do you understand how unprecedented this is? The president of the United States, since the unholy resurrection of this terrorist entity known as the Jewish state in 1947, he has just offered military assistance from the United States in helping to retaliate against Israel. This has never happened, folks. How does a president who's owned by the Jews do something like this? And like I said, it's not just going to be Qatar, folks. It's going to eventually envelop the entire Middle East, because the president knows that if World War III, if Armageddon is to break out, it's going to break out in that part of the world, and it's going to be because of Israel. Now, let's talk about the economic thing for just a moment, folks, because there was a very interesting story that came out Friday. Okay, so right before Netanyahu landed in New York and right before the UN General Assembly. This is a story coming off of NBC News, and the title of it is Supreme Court allows the president to withhold $4 billion in foreign aid funding. Remember, folks, this is on Friday, right before the president gives his address at the UN General Assembly, right before Netanyahu and he meet. So essentially what has happened here is that the Supreme Court overturned a lower court's ruling that would have forced the Trump administration to spend specifically, folks, this number was very specifically mentioned, $4 billion that Trump was saying that he was not going to spend. Okay, so in essence, the Supreme Court, what they said is, no, foreign policy is completely within the purview and the authority of the executive branch, and they have the right, the executive branch has the right to decide when and how to spend these funds that have been allocated by Congress. Now, folks, this did not just happen out of the blue, where the Supreme Court issued this ruling just prior to Netanyahu landing to address the UN General Assembly. Okay, $4 billion, folks. The president decided on that number weeks or months ago, and then had his people working with the Supreme Court behind the scenes in order to have this decision rendered right before Netanyahu lands. So here the president is, and believe me, folks, if yours truly picked up on this, you can absolutely take to the bank the fact that Netanyahu and his people picked up on this immediately. This was the president telling Netanyahu before he landed, in addition to the fact that he is, quote-unquote, not going to allow the Jews to steal the West Bank and Gaza. But in addition, this number of $4 billion, this was done specifically in order to make Netanyahu and the rest of these terrorists understand that they're about to get their throats slit in the form of no more foreign aid. Now, Stas, am I reading too much into this, or do you agree with my theory here that this was basically the president telling Netanyahu ahead of time before he landed that all of that money, that $30 million a day that the terrorist Jews get from the American people, yes, folks, $30 million a day, 7 days a week, that's what they get from us. That this is on the line if Netanyahu doesn't come to the White House and keep his head low?
No, it's incredible. I mean, it's like Titus telling off the Pharisees to the Sanhedrin. I mean, he's saying this is enough. And to all the stupid Republicans that voted for Trump because you think he's best friends with Netanyahu, or if you have a view of Christianity that thinks America should help us waste all those babies over there, you got to look in the mirror and realize that you're not a follower of Jesus. You're satanic. That's the devil of something. And they think, it's somebody who loves the Old Testament, hates the New Testament, hates Jesus. I mean, otherwise, what good is it? I mean, does that mean that Jesus would say, help Netanyahu destroy this? It's Hamas or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people believe that. There's still like Hamas, you know? There's a book that's out there that the Israelis are saying, October 7th, the day we got beat, we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. The best of the best, you know? I mean, it's outrageous. They're asking us to believe, you know, with all this evidence, you know, there's even witnesses that say that they saw the IDF enact their rules of the Hannibal Directive and blew all these students away. Mm-hmm. Apparently, really, Netanyahu doesn't really like those kids that much anyway. You know,
yeah, right, like, because they're on the left. They're on the left.
Yeah, no good to him, really. You know, and I'm grateful for that part, but sometimes, you know, you got to look at where it's coming from, like you've told me, you know, Aaron Maté and Max Blumenthal, of course, I like these guys in general, but this is a life or death situation, so you sort of got to analyze their analysis of the situation and say, no, you're going too far. Our Gentile king is trying to stop this thing, guys.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely, yeah.
And that's the way it is.
And Stas, honestly, you know, right now, I can hear the wheels turning in some of the heads of the listeners, and they're saying, "Okay, what's the point of all this?" Okay, the point of all of this, folks, is that we don't know what's going to happen an hour from now. Okay, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen next week. The government has officially shut down. Okay. So what's going to happen now? Is there going to be a major terrorist attack courtesy of Israel that they weren't able to prevent, quote unquote, because the government, you know, was down. OK, everything was down. And so it is possible that something along these lines is headed our way. At which point it may back the president back into a corner where he's forced to undo it, to recant, to say, you know, to Netanyahu, okay, just like he did with Epstein. Okay, when Netanyahu came to town a couple of months ago and Trump said he was going to be firm with him, and then all of a sudden, while Netanyahu is still in town, Trump, the president, announces that the Epstein thing, that there's nothing there. Okay, so obviously, folks, something happened when Netanyahu met with him, and Epstein was the issue, and it forced the president into a corner where he was forced to cry uncle. He may have to do it again. He may have to do it again tomorrow or the day after or next week, because with this government shutdown, okay, the stage is set for something to blow up. And we know that the Jews are going to do this, folks. Okay, they're not going to sit back and watch as 3,000 years of meticulous planning goes down the toilet because of one guy and his plans to stop World War III. They're going to blow something up. So are they going to do it during this government shutdown? And ask yourself the following question, folks, okay? Since we know the pull that Netanyahu and the Israelis have over Congress, then, and if Netanyahu and Trump are the best of friends, then why is Netanyahu not interceding on Trump's behalf and telling the members of Congress, go along with what the president wants? Go along with him, come up with a budget that he finds acceptable so that it can get signed, and so that the government business can stay in business. Why isn't that happening? And please, don't anybody out there tell me, oh, Netanyahu doesn't have that kind of pull. Yes, he does, folks. If Netanyahu and his people had the kind of pull to see Iraq destroyed and Afghanistan destroyed and Libya destroyed and Syria destroyed and all of that, if they had the ability to get wars started, then they certainly have the ability to call up these members of Congress and to tell them, look, let go of this thing, give him the budget that he needs. And the fact that this isn't happening, folks, I mean, we have to consider that this government shutdown happening in the manner that it is and at the time that it is, that this is Netanyahu's way of setting up the country for a major terrorist attack. Because, folks, you know, we're walking blind. Everything is shut down. There's no money. Yes, the troops, they still have to serve, and the federal agencies, the law enforcement and intelligence people, but they're doing it without pay, okay, at least for the moment. So it's exactly in a moment such as this that you could have something really bad happen. And who would be blamed for it, folks? Who would be blamed for it? Stas, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, the networking of the Israel, it's not just their lobby. They have all this networking that puts pressure on the president. They've got Schumer in there. They push for a government shutdown. It is a type of scenario that, let's say, well, because Trump screwed up, there wasn't the funding and our defenses were weak. It's his fault that the next building, maybe in Chicago, the tall building over there gets blown up or something bad. That they'll
worse.
Worse, a nuclear bomb in some city or multiple cities, and they'll blame it on Trump. It's your fault.
Yep.
You're
yep.
nasty. You the government shut down because you refused to deal with the excellent Democrats.
You know, I hate to have to make the prediction that I'm going to make, Stas. And, you know, our good friend Mike Piper, may he rest in peace, he always told me, look, don't make predictions, because out of the 1,000 predictions that you make and the 999 of them that are found right, it'll be the one that doesn't pan out that they'll remember. But nevertheless, folks, I'm going to make a prediction. Okay. The chattering class, as we refer to it here on this program, meaning the ones who incessantly, just like the sheep in George Orwell's Animal Farm, and they're two legs bad, four legs good, or four legs bad, two legs good. Okay, the chattering class, who seem to have no other answer to anything other than Donald Trump is owned by the Jews, if indeed something terrible does happen, some type of a horrible terrorist attack that makes 9/11 just look like, you know, a cartoon, then they're going to say that Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and Netanyahu worked this out together behind the scenes when Netanyahu was in town, and that everything else that took place with the president saying no stealing of the West Bank, no stealing of Gaza, Qatar mutual defense treaty, all the rest of that, that this was all a big act. Wait for it, folks. It's coming just as sure as New Year's Day is going to fall on January the 1st. Stas, your thoughts before we close out the program today?
I agree with that. The if we're not all dead or whatever survivors, they'll blame Trump. They'll say he was in on it with Netanyahu. 9/11 Part 2 was him. Yeah. Even though he's fighting the death, the poor guy, his voice is hoarse or whatever, but no, he's still controlled. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's an incomplete understanding, or they didn't look back to the wars of Josephus and the different histories of antiquity, how hard these emperors had to deal with these people. 200 years at war with the Judea region. You know, basically the Iraq wars of the Rome and more worse. And all these different nuances, it's just comfortable to just say, well, the Illuminati control everything, therefore.
Oh, no. I mean, this is the good thing. This is the blessing and the curse of the internet, is that it has made information easier for people to get. You don't have to go down to the library and open up, you know, the index cards and all the rest of that. It's just right there. But the curse, obviously, is that it encourages stupidity, it encourages laziness, it encourages mediocrity, and it encourages just a detachment from reality. I mean, you know, I carry on a lot of conversations with people, you know, outside the internet, just local people here about politics. And some of the crap, I'm sorry to have to use language like that, folks, but some of the crap that comes out of their mouths, it's like, you know, are you able to balance your checkbook? I mean, do you function like a normal human being, you know, where you have to do certain things in order to make the machinery of life function the right way? I mean, it's just, it's amazing, folks. It really is amazing that society manages to function on the level that it does. It's quite an amazing thing. Stas, I cannot thank you enough. We all cannot thank you enough for your contribution to today's discussion. It was, in a three-syllable word, it was brilliant. Every word that came out of your mouth was pure gold. I hope we can count on even more of it next week, assuming that we're all still alive, folks, and that the Terminators right. have not won. That the Terminators have not won.
I was
going
to say one more thing. I think it's, yes. It's, either we could get an attack like that, or even we could expect any kind of situation, maybe even Trump trying to save the world and the country. Might have to throw a bone, a line, and they go, oh, if there's any anti-Israeli sites and things there, okay, we'll shut them down or something.
Sure.
But, you know, yep. his mm-hmm. the Trump people might have to shut down different sites like
sure.
this one.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
You know, I would
yeah,
be surprised.
I totally expect at some point, you know, because the only way he is going to be able to frustrate Netanyahu and those terrorists over there from gaining the upper hand in this narrative of painting Trump as an enemy of Israel, which they're already trying to do, folks. The only way that he can prevent that from happening is by engaging in some heavy-handed tactics here at home in order to negate that narrative. And so if he started, you know, shutting down websites, that's right, folks, including this one, okay, probably the most pro-President Trump outlet you're going to find, because of the fact that we spend a lot of time reading between the lines and dissecting these things in order to get the kind of picture that we do about things. But yes, I totally agree with you, Saz. I don't think that we've discussed that, but it's something that I have thought about lately, especially with some of the moves that have taken place, you know, where he's been forced to, you know, deport certain people and deny student visas to foreign students who, you know, who are critical of Israel. Yeah, they may actually have to come after this little humble little informational endeavor as well. And I won't take it personally. I know that this is just the nature of the battle that he's fighting. But yeah, it's you know, it's the point is, folks, it is a lot more complicated, a lot more convoluted than what these other pundits out there, as Stas refers to them, with their podcasts and their programs and their analysis. It's a lot more complicated than they make it out to be. Okay, it is the ultimate dynamic situation. It is constantly changing, constantly mutating and morphing and evolving. And there's just no telling what the facts on the ground are going to force on everything tomorrow. Anyway, Stas, this was a fantastic conversation. Hang on there for just a second. I'm going to close out the program, but I want to talk to you off the air.
Absolutely.
Anyway, folks, that was it for today, October the 1st, 2025, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. Yeah, I did receive an email from somebody who took religious offense to me referring to Jesus as the King of the Gentiles, folks. And they said, no, the Bible says he's King of the Jews. Well, no, folks, okay. Pontius Pilate was the one who had that inscribed above the crucifix. And when Pontius Pilate said to the assembled gang of bloodthirsty Jews screaming for Jesus to be murdered, he said, he's your king. And they said, we have no king but Caesar. Okay. Which is why, folks, they have been ruled by the Caesars for 2,000 years since that time. Okay. They wanted Caesar for a king. They have had the Caesars for their kings. And at that point, obviously, folks, Jesus became the King of the Gentiles, because it is the Gentiles who have grown to love and revere him. Of all stripes, folks, you know, it's not just the Christians. Everybody loves Jesus except for the Jews. The Hindus love Jesus. The Buddhists love Jesus. I have met atheists who love Jesus, folks. Everybody loves Jesus except for the Jews. And that should tell us everything that we need to know about these people. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. God willing, we'll be back in a week or so, assuming that we're all alive. And until that time, folks, mind your words, watch what you say, and be careful, because as we say on this program, folks, everybody lives and dies based upon the nature of the conversation that is taking place.